Why is it that when one man builds a wall, the next man immediately needs to know what's on the other side?
Welcome to 2C1C, the Game of Thrones podcast founded in 2010 by myself, Will Lentz, Greg Atkinson, and Brett Zeiler. Now hosted by myself, Daryl Lloyd, and Kyle Vansel, with guest appearances by past hosts and more. Many thanks to GRRM and FFG for making this possible, CarGameDB for our hosting, and Josh Woodward for the Creative Commons music you hear in this episode. Welcome to Season 4.5.
Bueller? Anybody?
Why, Will? Why does he?
I don't know. I frankly don't know. The snow is always colder on the other side. I'm not sure.
No, wildling redheads are always hotter on the other side.
There we go. I like the way you think, sir.
My wife hates Egret.
Really?
Yep, only character she dislikes as much as Sansa.
Is it that voice, or she hates, like, her actions?
I have no idea.
But she hates the hot redheads.
She never actively said anything about her, and then, like, when she died, she was like, yes! Yes, I hate her! I hate her so... Like, it boiled over. It was fantastic.
Weird. I kind of liked her. Even the weird way she said Jon Snow really kind of grew on me after a while.
I liked her in the book, so I was, like, predisposed to like her, but I don't know. It just seemed... less tough in the show.
It's probably because she didn't have a spear like she was supposed to also have.
Spear wife.
I liked her.
Uh-huh.
Hi.
Oh, that was my whole comment. It was just, I liked her. That was all I had.
I liked her too. Hi. I'm Will,
nope.
Generally known as Kenan.
No, you're not. We already have an intro.
I'm Daryl.
I'm still there.
Konnichiwa, bitches.
Ooh, listen to that. Aaron is, like, stealing Kyle's old introduction.
You know, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, so that's fine.
You know what else I like? Nobody.
Battle scenes that last an hour?
No, I was going to go with podcasts that last around an hour. Sometimes an hour and a half. Sometimes 2.5 hours. You know, really, we're not that specific. Just generally longer than an hour. This is two champs and a really long podcast. Wait. I mean, a really long podcast and four chumps?
Hey, championship level, remember?
Yeah, championship level player. You know, I do...
It makes me upset that that's Will. That really, of all the people...
Really? Would you rather be the championship level player?
Well, no. I just don't like that it's you.
You know, I don't know. I was listening to, you know, the other podcast, Beyond the Wall. Interesting that we're talking about walls a moment ago. And, you know, they gave me a little grief over that. But I will say that John did have a really good point. I am certifiably the only championship level player in the world. Named so by FFG, in print, and I'm pretty sure that that should be worth a card design. So FFG, you better get on it.
So speaking of the other podcast, just to shut him up, Dark Nudge actually insists I say hi to you guys on the air right now. So Dark Nudge says hi to both of you guys. Well, all three of you guys. So I'm bad at
Aww.
Math.
Well, hello, John.
He's pretty drunk.
Hello, John. Hello, John. Bonus points.
Is that his name? Is it John?
So, were they...
Yep. It's Dark John backwards.
Yeah.
Oh, come on. It's a community reference.
But I was going to say, were they dogging on just you or all the hosts? Are we all bad and should be on the air, or just you should not be?
just me in particular.
Oh, good. Okay. My notoriety has not spread to being just another podcast yet. I like that.
Yeah. You know, I mean, really, it's kind of flattering, because how many other podcasts get to be news on another podcast?
I guess that is true. Silver linings.
Yeah.
That's Will's specialty.
It was a really slow news day, evidently.
Yeah, we should not be making the cut on anyone's airtime.
Yeah.
Other than, I guess, our own.
I was about to say, we barely even make it on our own.
I give us that. I show up.
You know what is newsworthy?
What, Will?
Finally, someone plays along with my rhetorical question.
Oh, shit.
So, we have a pretty big announcement on the FFG main page. It's titled Secrets and Schemes, which is, conveniently enough, also the name of the new chapter pack that got spoiled. New chapter pack, you say, but haven't we already heard about all six in this cycle? That's right, my friend. This is the first pack of the next cycle, which should come out, if I know the FFG timeline right, roughly this time next year.
Ouch.
Yeah. It's just, these articles always get me so pumped for the new cards, and it's just such a downer that they are so far in advance that, you know, I won't see them forever. But this is the Warden cycle, which finally, in a way, brings House Aaron to the game, which a lot of players have been clamoring for. What do you guys think?
I think they did it because I'm on this podcast. They wanted to name everything after Aaron.
Is this how you spell your name? A-R-R-Y-N?
No, phonetically.
You should look into changing the spelling of your name. I think that'd be bad.
That's a whole another level of commitment.
It really.
You'd be the most hardcore Thrones player. I like it. It's a kind of an area that's not talked about a lot in the Thrones card pool right now. I remember it had just rotated out when I got into the game back in CCG, but some of the House Aaron Vale stuff was cool. The region offers a lot of neat stuff. Hopefully this bodes that clansmen might actually be a thing. Like I said, the Aarons. Who else is over there? I feel like I'm missing something big.
Over there in the Vale?
Yeah, you know.
The clansmen and the Aarons.
Yeah.
Littlefinger now.
Yep.
Elaine Stone.
Peeta.
Yeah.
Harry the Heir.
Indeed. I like Harry the Heir. I've been mentioning him a lot lately in discussions, thanks to where the TV show is at the moment. And people just keep looking at me like I'm crazy because no one evidently remembers who he is.
Yep. And all those awesome Vale knights.
Yeah, Sir Robar Royce and such. And the other Royce. What are the other Royce's names? There's multiples, right?
Isn't there some with bronze in it?
Yeah, the Bronze Yawn. Yeah, Bronze Yawn Royce. There we go.
Yep.
I think that's Robar's father.
Those guys. I'm just excited for Clansmen. Like, there has to be at least a couple Clansmen cards, and that's great.
I mean, they definitely said that there will be some more Clansmen.
Yeah, it's announced.
Yep.
So
Aaron's coming in as a neutral faction instead of another house, like some folks were clamoring for. I still say it could have been done with the deluxe expansion, but they opted not to. Are you guys okay with this neutral business?
I like it a lot more as a neutral. I would hate having an eighth house.
Eighth?
Well, if there's a six plus neutral, this would be eight, right?
Well, neutral's not a house.
Whatever.
No, it's a house.
It's not a house.
I don't care. Point is, it would be bad. I know people want it, but it would have been bad. And made things even more convoluted than they need to be. Plus, events spreading out cards and resources. And can you imagine how hard it would be to catch a house up at this point? It'd be ridiculous.
Not too hard if they're planning some kind of rotation in the fall.
Yeah, there's not going to be anything wrong with having like an expansion, like another house. There's nothing wrong with that. The game could handle it just fine, I think. But I'm okay with House Aaron being neutral. It wouldn't suck. Why would it suck? Why would options in the game you love suck?
It would either be OP as balls, and there'd only be so many cards, and it would be insane, and one deck that would be impossible to beat.
I mean, only if you're designing it. I mean, what do you mean? Are you saying that FFG couldn't design another house?
Yeah.
The sheer number of cards that you would need to print for them to make them flexible and viable in the game state right now.
I mean, it's not always about being flexible and viable, though. Not right
Sometimes
now.
Sometimes it's just fun.
Yeah,
okay.
Maybe
well,
in
yes,
the future.
They could physically create a fun house that could exist. They could out 120 cards, and they're all pretty cool, and you'd have a blue, green, I don't know, a purple. A
purple-colored
house, and everyone all
I always
purple.
Figured they
maybe
would be
a light pink.
Blue, like their banners.
Or cornflower blue.
Too close to gray.
It's a really good color.
Wait, we know that everyone loves complaining, right? Like, this whole community freaks out about everything.
Right.
If they released a bunch of House Aaron cards and they were terrible, how much would everyone freak out?
Quite a bit. But you
Probably.
Know what they would enjoy even more?
When good
if
cards
House
were
If House Aaron
printed.
Came out as its own expansion and was stronger than Martell, then everyone could bitch about them instead of Martell.
Yeah, but even then, like, Martell has like 6 good builds. If you release that House expansion, House Aaron's going to have, like, one stupid deck, and it's just going to be everywhere. And I don't know. That doesn't sound especially fun.
Exactly.
That's
exactly what I said.
This is it.
Exactly.
I think that is a design error. That's not necessarily
that
just an error
a,
of having a new house.
It is about the volume of cards.
It's not.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? You're saying they couldn't just...
You have a bunch of cards to... Otherwise, you, by sheer numbers, pigeonhole them into certain builds.
Yeah, for now.
It's like Greyjoy Knights. If you only have one knight, you're not building a knight's deck.
So are you advocating Greyjoy get more knights?
Sure. Knight it up.
Sounds terrible.
Can we just put numbers after the knight? The knight 2? The knight 3?
Brilliant.
There you go.
So I guess the FFG spoiled the new cycle today.
So, I was trying to make a segue here with the Martell connection, so we could actually talk about some of the cards that were spoiled. But
one in
particular I'm looking at is Aloof and Apart.
Yeah.
Is that the agenda?
Too.
That's the agenda, which I kind of wonder about because it's obviously hinting at House Aaron with that name and the kind of talon there in the art. But it doesn't mention the House Aaron trade at all. So
it's a claw on it. I mean, the art is very alluding to the bird folk.
Right, it definitely is, but it just makes me wonder if maybe there's more than one agenda in this cycle. Maybe there's something that actually does something to make an Aaron like themed deck, which would be cool. But
Nate actually wrote the article, and specifically in the article it says that House Aaron is designed to be splashed, not its own thing. That's supposed to represent them being kept apart and like keeping their house safe and not really getting involved. He specifically says he doesn't want House Aaron to be its own deck. It's supposed to be splashed elsewhere.
Okay, I may have skimmed over that too much just looking for card spoilers. I would argue that's actually kind of less Nedley than having them be kind of xenophobic and only work with each other, because, frankly, who else did they help in the novels? Nobody.
But I think that's part
that's
of the
a
point.
Different issue.
They helped Littlefinger. Like
Yeah.
Well, Littlefinger helped Littlefinger.
So does that.
But what I was getting at with Aloof and Apart is what it actually does, which is kind of crazy when you look at it.
Yeah.
It's reduce the cost of the first character with printed cost 4 or higher. You play each round by 2, and characters you control with printed cost 4 or higher cannot be returned to your hand by your card effects and gain prize 1 while leaving print. Play. I can't talk. And I thought this was...
What a weird restriction.
Yeah, it's bizarre. I thought it was kind of interesting, kind of crazy when I first read it, and then I was like, it's clunky, but okay, I see that they were trying to stop Gaston Grey shenanigans. Because if I'm replaying Arion for two every turn and bouncing something, or the Viper for three and such. Like, that's a lot of economy. And I was like, okay, whew, I'm glad they accounted for that. Until someone else pointed out, no. Returning a character to hand with Gaston Grey is a cost. And I'm like, ah, crap. Yep, I didn't read that close enough. So now I gather there's some discussion, shall we say, some disagreement as to whether this was intended to stop that sort of thing or not. I just find it interesting. It's worded very specifically right now as card effects.
Are you sure that...
I mean, in the game,
Gaston Grey really gets around this.
Cost and effect are two separate things in Game of Thrones. Like, look at, say, Princess Wrath. The cost is kneel one influence, two, and then the effect is choose a character and they lose all their icons. So, in Gaston Grey, it's return a noble, two, return another character. Returning the noble is the cost. Anything after the two is the effect.
Did you see it got sent to the designers already?
I did not see that. What'd they say back?
The reply was, we don't comment on cards that aren't released.
In other words, they're scrambling to figure out what to do. I humbly submit they errata this in the closest FAQ to when this pack comes out, and the solution is actually extremely simple. They delete the word effects and add an S to the end of card. Cannot be returned to hand by your cards. Then that covers all your bases.
How about we just let it be returned to hand? You're basically paying a prized one every single time.
No, prized one.
Nope.
Does not affect return to hand.
Triggers going to the discard dead pile.
Not necessarily true. This specifically says when they leave play. It does not say when they go to play.
But the keyword itself doesn't trigger until the card goes into discard or dead pile.
Well, timing-wise, it's probably when it goes to Morbin. But regardless, the keyword does specifically reference dead or discard.
But then wouldn't it be gains prized when they die or are discarded, not when they leave play? Because I think it's basically doing a workaround for that.
Well, Conquest is worded as leave play as well, but it also does not, you know, give your opponent power every time you bounce a Viper with Gaston Grey or whatever it may be.
Very good point.
Yeah.
Okay. So do you guys think it's good?
I think it's real good.
I'm intrigued.
It's interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. It's really going to mess with deck building and figuring out the right curve.
You know what? It's not a card advantage agenda. So for that sheer fact alone, I like it.
I mean, unless it does work with Gaston Grey. Well, maybe that makes it more of a resource advantage, but
yeah.
Oh, well.
I mean, I think it's boring. I don't really like it.
I agree.
I don't see how this is an interesting agenda. I don't like the premise of it. I don't like any of it. I just don't like it. I'm not saying it's OP. I'm not saying it's going to be weak. I'm not even saying it's balanced. I'm just saying I don't really like this. Like, this isn't interesting to me. I really wish that we could have gone in a different direction with that. I mean, I understand wanting to run, like, wanting to put the House Aarons of cost four or whatever into other, you know, other decks and things like that, but I just feel like you could have gotten a little more creative with that. Like, we already have prized for, like, rainbow decking things and stuff, and I get it. Like, you could play your Red Viper for three instead of five, but I just don't like
Bannerman for five instead of seven.
Yeah, I mean, it's just not an interesting effect. I mean, I guess you're gambling, you're filling your deck with, you know, above four cost guys so that you're getting the most out of this agenda, and it could turn out to hurt you, it could turn out to be fine, but I just don't see as an agenda in this game that it's really adding something. I just don't like it. You know, it's not like, you know, it's not distinguished. You know, you got like the Maester's Path, you know, it had all this crazy effect. And you know, you have Brotherhood, which, you know, not a great, not really a great agenda, but still an interesting effect. You know what I mean? You place the card on your characters. I just don't like this.
It's a less effective House of Dreams Godswood.
I don't think that's true.
I mean, you can't House of Dreams Godswood.
I think it's fine. I mean, it's going to build a different kind of deck. I mean, let's be honest, outside of Viper, how many consistent 4-cost or higher characters do you see? Because I think of the Viper and Arianne.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely going to be some armies that are chosen. Yeah. Red Queen's Faithful, and the Viper's Bannerman, the Flank, King Balance Host, so on and so forth. There's a lot of army choices.
And this doesn't specify non-army, right?
Right.
Correct. I would have liked it more if it would have said, like, unique, or, like, maybe a trait of some kind. Like, that would have been kind of interesting. But even then, like, you know, we had the Wildling agenda, the Last Giant, you know, that reduce the cost of a character, but, you know, I feel like there's just more design space in the game than this.
Well, what about the theme in general here, which is kind of pushing those high-cost characters? I don't know if we necessarily want to hit on every single card that was spoiled here in detail, but they do spoil some other cards, like Skycell and Mord and Ill and Pain, that play into that. Is the theme as a whole interesting? I at least kind of like Skycell because of the, like, thematic idea to me. You slap it on this character, and as long as your opponent keeps it around, they have to choose their plots at random, which feels very...
That's so awesome.
Yeah, very much like you're really driving them crazy, and then eventually they're going to want to just kill this character off and, you know, basically have them fling themselves out the Skycell. You know, to solve that problem because they can't take it anymore. So that one is a huge Nedley win for me.
Sure, but unless you're winning that turn, what that reads is attached to a character of cost 3 or less and kill that character.
Right.
So,
well, that would be okay.
All the extra stuff is cool, but, like, unless you're winning that turn or, like, have nothing but amazing plots and you don't care which is next, which is extremely unlikely if you're good, you're just going to kill the character. You're just going to, all right, well, the character's dead. Next.
And there are some characters that you don't want that to happen to.
Well, that's true. And also, now, there's not a ton of ways to do it. Actually, I can only think of one, maybe two now with this plot, but you can, well, the plot really wouldn't matter. But, like, Pale Steel Link puts the attachment into play, so you can do this after the marshalling phase. You know, you put it on a dude. And now, next turn, they're going to have to choose their next plot at random. That fucking sucks.
Mm-hmm. I think that's absolutely the best use, but the problem is most of your maesters that you're going to put that link on are cost 3 or less, so they're going to be vulnerable to it, too.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's great. It hits maesters. There are a lot of characters that I think I would love to put it on a Brienne. Stuff like Lewin. Mira takes attachments.
I mean, even if it's not an incredibly effective card, it's one of the cooler cards I've seen in a while. Like, that is very interesting, and I like that.
I'm sure it has some
It's probably going to piss me off, but whatever.
Well, yeah. That is so often the case whenever something bad happens to your stuff. Not you in particular, I just mean as a player, like, yeah, that always pisses me off when bad things happen to my stuff.
So we're basically back to running a bunch of, or we have to start finding attachment hate at this point if they're going to keep printing this many power attachments.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it's a secret that FFG wants us to play attachments again after what the 10-link did to the game.
Yeah, but they need to give attachment control to more than Targ, right?
Yeah, I mean,
maybe not mass attachment control, but, you know, a little bit here and there.
Yeah. Pieces. Of course, Baratheon, I think, still has a really good option in Maester Cresson. Yeah, but this Skycell, which I would sort of have thought could have been a condition, is not. It is just the Veil.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is.
It's also interesting, they're pushing these attachments, but only the negative ones really look playable. We get the Sky Cell, which, you know, has some uses and is really interesting thematically. And then we get, for positive attachments, like Blackfire, which has a dozen restrictions on it. You know,
well, Harpy Scourge is still phenomenal.
So, yeah.
Like, it's at least one.
Good point. And Heartsbane looked okay to me as well.
Whatchamacallit, the Brienne on a Stick needle?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that seems playable. I haven't delved too much into Stark in the last few months, so may need to do that and see how well it works out.
I'll send you something. Stark No Agenda might be the best deck in the meta.
Stark's looking real good at the moment, like Daryl and I were talking over the weekend.
Yeah.
Well, what about any of the other stuff here? We've got another plot cycle, I'm thinking, because we see this castle trait. Nate does say castle plots, plural, so there will be several in here at least. They give you some kind of delayed effect. I feel like the effects may need to be better than the example we got in Holding Council, which is a 4/7/1, and after it is placed in your use pile, I can put a card with printed cost 1 or lower into play from my hand. So it's effectively 1 extra gold.
Or 3 if you're choosing something out of house.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that means we're going to get more of. This seems like a plot cycling thing, doesn't it?
It does kind of seem that way. Yeah.
No?
The faster you can cycle it and put
drop in your Riders of the Red Fork.
Wait, drop in Riders? What?
Can't you do that? It satisfies the location cost 1 or lower.
No. Riders satisfy any search effect. It's not a search.
Whatever. Yeah. I tried to be clever. I wasn't.
It's a good try, though, but I don't know. If they're at this level, I'm still not really digging that too much. Stats are okay, but the effect feels lacking.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting. Well, I don't know.
You know what's better than that damage? The Bloody Gate is better than that agenda.
What was the Bloody Gate again?
Isn't that the two cost reducer from Greyjoy?
No, the Bloody Gate is...
Oh, I was thinking of Bloody Keep. My bad.
No, the Bloody Gate, and let me give you the exact text if I could find it, it's naturally not one they have information. Kneel the Bloody Gate to reduce the cost of the next 2 cards with printed cost 4 or more that you play this phase by 2 each.
Yeah. Kneel it to get 4 gold, basically.
Yeah.
Hey, between it and the agenda, I mean, you're dropping 4 costers for free.
Yeah. You're dropping the Viper so you can bounce him with Gaston Grey for 1 gold a turn.
I'd rather play this with Martell Baratheon Rush. I feel like that's just going to break Martell Baratheon Rush.
Oh, yeah, that'll be great for them.
But we'll see.
Yeah.
We will certainly see.
Well, let's see what else we have. I guess the last kind of big theme that they hit on here is limited responses returning.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like much of a choice right now. I mean, what Lannister has the only actual choice if you want the Castellan or the Guildhall. You know, they've got that other 0 drop location, but no one in the right mind is going to play it.
You forgot one. The new one, the plot cancel.
Oh, you're right.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, sure enough. So Lanny has some actual choices to make there, but the other houses don't really. So, you know, hopefully there are maybe like 3 of these per house coming in this cycle to actually force some choices.
I thought the ones they did show, though, so far were like really overcost and not very good.
Yeah, why don't you read off the drum that we've got?
The big one, like the easiest example, I think, because I don't think we need to go over everyone, because one is really good and one is like, well, the other two are kind of crappy. There's the Peter Baelish that gets discarded if you have a little figure. It's 4/3, 4 cost, 3 strength, intrigue power, stealth, and kneel to cancel an event. But for 4 cost, a repeatable event cancel that you're not really going to be wanting to attack with because you need that, like, cancel, I don't know how much use that's going to be. Like, I might rather have a better costed character in a paper ship, you know?
Really? I don't know. I think he seems pretty solid, especially if you do happen to run him in a deck that has, say, the Bloody Gate, or, heaven forbid, you are playing the Illufinopar agenda. You know, anything that puts him in the 2-cost range starts making him look pretty sweet to me.
The fact that you can hit things with influence makes him golden. I mean, right now you do it for 3 influence out of Martell on an event. To just kneel a guy for it, I think that's phenomenal.
But then you have to keep him standing at all times.
Right.
Like, a lot of the events, particularly the ones that you care about, are going to be happening in, like, the odd phases toward the end. And that means that, like, this character is just going to be expensive. Unless you're running those specific things, it's going to be expensive and sitting there, like, hoping to be used. And a lot of the times you're going to use him, you're going to need him for attack soon.
Yeah, but then it's kind of a deterrent,
though. We're seeing a theme come from this cycle with this 4 gold threshold. So if we're seeing tons of boosts for 4 gold things, what if we get something like a Maria Seaworth for 4 cost and up? Or, like, I have no idea, but these effects where you can protect them or boost them, make them better, like, the more boons to run these 4 cost characters, which up until now, I'm very hesitant to run anything 4 cost or higher just for the, like you said, being stuck with an expensive character you can't use. I mean, that ability can be huge to cancel a Prince's Plans, a Westeros
sure.
Bleeds.
What, but you're forgetting Carahal. But, like, Carahal's out.
You can't do that, though. You can't be like, well, this every response now is invalid because of 1 card. Like,
well,
you can't
sure.
do that.
Sure you can. Like, why would you pay 4 for that character that can do
what
that?
What if we're running the agenda and we paid 2 for him? Then
if you're running
you
the agenda, that's one specific case where he'd be good, sure. But, like, that's literally one specific case where he's good. I can't think of a single other deck written. Maybe, like, a Martell Hollow Hill where you don't have guys to kill, where I'd rather him over 2 Heracles.
No, I love it. I mean, to cancel Wheels Than Wheels, Counterplot, there's some, You Murdered Her Children. Like, I just think there's a lot of, especially with these prized events now, that it's just, it's phenomenal. I don't see how it's not.
Yeah, I think he's pretty rad. Like, I totally understand having an expensive character and wanting to use him rather than keeping him back. And who knows, you know, maybe other turns you will use him. Maybe you've already got cancel in your hand that you feel confident in. But I think he's pretty solid, really, just looking at him.
I will almost bet he sees next to no play.
You're right. Wrong.
I don't know if he'll see a ton, but he does
Bruno,
look awfully tempting.
Bruno, perspective, the card that Bruno wished he had more of in his deck was he loved Doran's Game, which is, outside of a Hall Hill build, almost unplayable. And it wasn't even for to learn its effect. It was just to be able to say, any event that hits the field, I can cancel, and there's no retort coming back at me.
Sure, but there's also far better neutral cancel. And there wasn't.
I think he's, and he's still a character. Like, it's not like he's not doing things for you.
Yeah, but when he's a character, he can't cancel events.
Well, that is a problem to solve.
You can't necessarily do both, and he may be winning you dominance. I don't know. We'll probably go round and round in circles here, and some of that is because of Harrenhal, which I think is a topic almost unto itself, possibly for another episode. It's not going to be for everything, but I think there are definitely decks that'll want it.
There is one other character I really love from this, the spoiled stuff. I love the new Maester Vyman.
Because he's a Tully, right? Is that why you love him?
Dying to just play Tullys all the time. But there's enough good Tullys that just repeatable card advantage sounds like a really good idea.
Yeah. And it's reveal, so it gets around the draw cap, though Stark's not capping itself very often. It's still kind of nice.
It's almost enough to make me play the Butts Left Blackfish.
Yeah. And another learned crest, always good. Stark wants to keep stuff on the board. Tully's probably even more so. So having more access to outwit is a good thing.
Yep. Yeah, that's a great effect. It'll be interesting to see with this set how many limited responses are printed that really make players choose what to put in. You know, because, I mean, if there's a ton of other limited responses, well, then we're kind of iffy on Maester Vymon. I mean, he's still pretty solid. At two strength, a little on the light side, but obviously maybe Stark Maesters could be a thing, or maybe you just throw him in your deck. Maybe he's the only House Tully in your deck. I don't know.
It doesn't really have to be, because like Edmure is in almost every Stark deck now. Yeah. Riders of the Red Fork are Tully. Jumper, well, basically all the cats.
Mm-hmm.
Most Starks are running Old Man, Guarded River Run. There's some good Tullys.
Yeah, definitely. I'm just saying, as a standalone, he's still good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think the new Illid Pain is bonkers.
Bonkers, eh?
That's the one card that jumped at me that I said, wow.
He's not an ally this time around, right?
Who?
No. Illid Pain.
Oh.
No.
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean, another the art, if nothing else.
Eh. Yeah.
Another four card.
That's super good.
I mean, he's okay. I think, to me, suffers from that same issue that Aaron's pointing out with Littlefinger, though I feel it worse with Illid Pain because, you know, Littlefinger's potentially stopping any events, barring, you know, cancel for the cancel and going down that rabbit hole. Illid Pain is just knocking off a very specific subset of character.
Three and lower is very specific.
And kneeling. Has to already be kneeling.
Kneeling. Okay, so you can just live in fear and never kneel down your three cost characters.
I mean, Lannister will kneel your guy for you.
Because Lanny has a huge issue there. So, yeah, now you can just leave him up the whole time. But the first time that you have a distinct mastery in your hand and Illid Pain gets to eat two of your characters, I mean, that's pretty brutal.
It's living the dream right there. Yeah. I mean, that's a good point. I hate that it's dominance phase, but I totally understand why. I totally understand.
It would be insane if it was anything else.
I know. I'm just saying.
But then you don't want to attack with him, and like Brienne's like the platonic ideal of who you kill with this, right? Like, there's not a better three-quest character in the game. You get to knock off Brienne, you're in heaven. But like, since you don't want to nail him, Brienne wins a military challenge and no border by Illid Pain.
Well,
you can't.
I don't think it's all about just using the bad things
that can happen to it. Because bad things can happen to any card. It's like, oh, I paid 5 gold for this Viper. Oh, you got guild-hauled into a Lannisport brothel. He's just done for the game. Like, that doesn't make him a bad guard.
It gave those bad things. And, like, having to keep him standing for two phases and not use him in challenges, which is when the bad things are going to happen to him, that's the problem. Like,
but you don't necessarily have to. You just have to have him up and dumb.
It's a 4-strength, 3-cost body that you're just leaving sitting there.
Not necessarily, like I said, just distinct mastery. Ask Sandy, he runs 3 of them in every deck.
No,
I mean, there's some
like first thing he sticks in.
There's some options, but like you were saying, Kyle, you know, something bad can happen to any card. You can't just judge everything off of the worst case scenario. But BCS, or best case scenario syndrome, can also be a problem. You know, you can't just judge him off of, well, yeah, if my opponent has, Brienne and Edmure Tully on the board, and I've got the distinct mastery, they're both knelt and I kill them both.
I'll take just eating a dude every turn.
Well, I think
essentially up my military claim by one, and that's all he does is win me Dom and then eats a guy.
Right.
That's fine.
Right, and I think that the cards that have been proven to repeatedly kill characters are great. I mean, we're going to talk about Bear Island later on today and how effective that is. Now, granted, his is limited to the cost of that character, but he's still good. Like, he's still unique. He's still a knight, which I think that Lannister Knights right now is one of the best decks in the format. He has a Warcrest, which I would love to see more Warcrest support out of Lannister anyways, because I love blowing shit up. I mean, the idea to, you shouldn't always bank on using him in dominance, but hey, if your control is rolling for you, you're kneeling guys, you don't have to use him for a challenge, well then, now you get rewarded by rocking somebody's dick off. That could sound really weird out of context.
Well, just for
which
thought,
is the only way people will hear.
Lannister loves going second, so imagine you're attacking the opponent, and there's ill and pain across the board, and you're going first. You don't know what he's going to do. Do you put down your brand? Do you put down these effects and leave him? So he goes, okay, fine, and just leaves him standing and eats him. Or, I mean, you don't know what he's going to do. Like, that threat there can be very powerful. And that should not be discounted.
It can be. I just, not for four cost and not one I can think of, like,
but that's the whole point of this cycle, is that the phrase, but not for four costs, goes away. Does everything it can, or we've seen so far, to boost that, an agenda about four costs or higher, a reducer for four costs and higher. You can't tell me that the only effects we're going to see are the ones spoiled so far.
We're going to see more effects, and let's not forget that the way that Lannister, their original design was just to have a ton of gold, have all the money to pay for everything anyway. So this could also maybe bring back that Lannister, I have all the gold in the world type of build, which is super fun if you've never played it. So
yeah, and just he's okay. Quality, high cost guys.
Yeah,
totally.
That would be nice. Some challenge control. He could be a fun addition. He's not Princes of the Sun Red Viper or anything, but like, he's decent.
Rather
killing dudes, knelt dudes in a deck that kneels people is good.
All right. Well, any parting thoughts on the cycle announcement as a whole before we move on to other various and sundries for the podcast?
I like that they're attacking an area of the game that does not see a lot of competitive play. That there's neutral stuff, that there's high-cost stuff, that it's things that you don't see making top cuts. And then they're trying to bring some positives to that. So well, I think that's cool. Anything that encourages new decks.
Right. I'm right there with you, but I for one, I'm like I said, I'm not a huge fan of the agenda. I just don't really like it. But I do like that they are encouraging players to change the way they build their decks. So... and there's obviously some awesome effects coming.
I like the idea an awful lot. I really wish I could play more four-cross characters, but I feel like this is, at the end of the day, just going to be a giant target for Burn.
Yeah. If they're still at the current strength point, that could be an issue.
And that's why you run your Peter Baelish. I think not.
Oh, so good. He's good. He really
is. I don't think he's bad.
He's 4-3 in Burn right now, like the current most popular Burn deck. I don't have to do anything extra to kill a 4-3 guy. I've got Dragon Pit, I've got Aegon, and I've got a threat from the north, and he's gone. And, like, that's not, like, some big fancy combo. That's something I pull off every single game to clear.
I mean, if that's what you're banking on, your Aegon's going to die, too.
Oh, no, Aegon doesn't say gets the start, yes, and then planes him.
But that's the dream.
That is the dream.
Dude, it's not. I do it all the time.
Well, yes, I'm not saying it's not an unrealistic one, but, I mean, that is a scenario. But a lot of things just melt at 3 strength. So,
what is the melting,
like,
point of characters in Game of Thrones? 3 strength.
Really, right now it is. I mean, that's the threshold. I mean, anything above that, and you feel pretty good about being able to stop the effects. But 3, like you said, there are situations where passives alone can do it.
Which is why I think a lot of these 4-cost reducer effects are actually going to be used on armies for that high strength.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. You are not wrong.
And big aggro army decks will be cool, too.
that angry. Oh,
Milky Way is just like pooping out the big guys.
Yeah, maybe we'll even see Sir Arthur Dayne get played again. Say what? Put Dawn on him, start rolling.
Yeah, I was just saying, put Dawn on him.
Dude, let's, that's living the dream right there.
Rock
that's living the dream.
Doesn't he get, like, +5 strength, something?
Yeah, that's a ridiculous while defending or something.
Yeah.
He becomes 10 strength renowned.
That's so dumb.
Immune to, like, stealth.
Well, I got the deck I'm going to build.
I think that makes a great time to segue to the next topic, which I think is going to be another installment in the Slaying the Mountain series. This time we're moving on to a new deck, and I believe this choice was one Aaron brought to the table. So why don't you start us out here?
So the New York Regional was this past week, and a relatively new deck type, or relatively old deck type that just came back, did really well, came in second place, and that's House of Dreams Bear Island. It was an awful lot of Stark good stuff. An early version of the deck is on Agat cards. I'm sure we can post that below. And, it was using Rivers for card advantage, all the Stark good stuff, and then using Bear Island, like what Sir Ellen Payne was said earlier. Using Bear Island is functionally like appointed claim reason whenever he wanted.
I wish I could say that I am surprised, but as somebody who has been playing a fair amount of Stark here recently, and 2X Bear Island in particular, I am not surprised to see that deck do well. Bear Island is a force to be reckoned with and has been for a long time, and it's only gotten better since players stopped playing attachments. In the mirror match, it's worthless, but I'm assuming that he put, like, one copy of Harrenhal in there to replace it for the mirror match, but
didn't.
I don't know. Ah, yeah. So, that's cool, though. I like that. That shakes it up a little bit. I haven't heard of a Stark deck here this year doing crazy good, that I know of, at least.
I was going to say, I saw this. Rings played it both out at Kubla, and I know he made top cut. I think he lost to Bruno in the top 8.
Gotcha.
But, and it's the exact same deck he ran at Nebraska, which is an unofficial, unsanctioned Fantasy Flight event. That was in no way endorsed by FFD, and yet had way better price support than anything they've put on in the last 3 years. But
Kyle's not.
That's an attribute to Matt Lay. I mean, he just like showed up with a table full of just stuff, and he goes, "This is my price support." I'm like, "This is like world scale." Not important. I mean, well, it is important. Go to Nebraska next year, but and he ran it there and just wrecked face with it, and I was like, "This is going to be something good." And as the rivers come out and get shore up the draw issue that Stark tends to struggle with, it just makes it insane. I mean, you have the resources, the beef, the extremely efficient characters, like just it just gets silly. And any problems you have, like you said, Bear Island takes care of it. It's a phenomenal card in both an aggressive sense and a control sense.
And the great thing about that deck is it also, like, Bear Island isn't the only murder it's got, son. It's Stark, so they're going to be murdering guys left and right. So you may think you're being sneaky by putting an attachment on one of your more important characters, but they're probably going to get murdered by an event of some kind anyways. So.
And then you're eating that character for claim.
Exactly. Maybe you put Rob in there, you got some Grey Wind rolling. Like, it's ridiculous.
Now, the thing you have to worry here is a lot of people... Harrenhal is going to change the game in a bit. Not in a huge way, but I think it's going to have one of the most significant impacts a non-plot card has had, non-plot, non-agenda card has had in a long time. But this is something where I think Stark players, that can't be your answer to it, because anything that's repeatable with no cost is going to just eat through your Harrenhal, and it's not going
to
matter.
Yeah, you can't afford to just be killing that character turn after turn after turn, especially against something that is planning on killing a character anyway.
Yeah, I mean, now it's just you choose instead of they choose.
I don't know.
Plus,
if that's
you only get 3 uses with Harrenhal.
Yeah, but if you run more than one Harrenhal, I don't know if that's true at all. Like, I've got a Red Viper, like, and any other Martell card out, you know what I mean? Like, you're going to go after my Viper, and I'm just going to be like, yeah, you can have an Edric Dayne. You can have I mean, the dream would be like a lost spearman or a refugee. But that kill is, I mean, how many turns do you need your big guy out? Like, right now, you're getting your big guy for two or three turns at best in the current meta anyway. So if you can keep Harrenhal for that and get those two or three turns out of your character, I feel like even if you're killing one character a turn, that big character is what you're trying to keep protected.
But if you're getting Stark murdered, and so all of their events are kill events, and often the point is to hit your best characters, but I think they'll take just sheer numbers. So if I try to kill your Viper, okay, you kill one of your Chuds. Okay, now I'll die by the sword him. Oh, you kill off another Chud. And now I'll no quarter him, and you'll kill off another Chud. Now I'll Bear Island him. A, your Harrenhal's blown, and B, now you have to kill off another dude. Like, it's just...
It can.
I don't think Harrenhal is a solution to beating Bear Island. It will cure a lot of ills against a lot of decks, but Harrenhal will not, I think, be able to be enough against Bear Island.
Yeah, I really don't think that Harrenhal's the answer there. Yeah. I mean, Harrenhal, yes, going to be an awesome effect, obviously. But with Bear Island, I mean, you're just trading one evil for another. So, yeah, you may plink off, one of your Chuds. But, I mean, it's going to depend on the game and how that game's running. You know what I mean? So if you're running, like, you have Chuds, well, maybe I use my kill events on your Chuds so that when it comes to Bear Island, then you have to kill somebody of more worth or something like that. You know what I mean? So it's going to depend. I don't think that that is necessarily an effect that's going to be really good against Bear Island, though.
So how do you beat it? Paper shields and a couple of decent attachments?
I mean, I just run Stark, so.
I mean, that is a good point. Stark is kind of hard answer.
Just
Bear
Island, everybody run Stark. It'll be fine.
if you're playing Martell, you just try and bait them into responses. All those kill events become, he calls it, faking fodder. And once that's an attachment on your guys, they're safe.
But that's the thing that everyone forgets. And I've been guilty of this, and it cost me, I think, 3 games at Missouri 1 year. But, Bear Island can only hit non-attachment-laden characters.
Correct.
I mean, I'm not saying that it's a big enough meta impact that you should definitely be running I wouldn't say a bunch, but have 2 or 3 really solid, nice attachments in your deck.
And there's something available for
Aegon's Blade, the Blackfyre, whatever the one is for Lightbringer comes to mind.
Lightbringer. Yeah, the Varys Stannis.
I don't know if I would do Blackfyre, but Aegon's Blade, Widow's Wail, Heartsbane, Harpy's Scourge.
Lightbringer's a good choice. I like Lightbringer.
Lightbringer is, yeah.
At least one solid attachment, I like to run, make sure I have what I call a knockout card, one of location, attachment, and character that's just super good, that if in the scenario that someone reigns summoning or building or spending for it, that I'm not caught with my pants down. Because I have before had someone drop spending on me, and I had no attachments.
Right.
Or what I had was crap, and you go get, I don't know, something awful, and you're just down that advantage.
Well, but build decks without awful cards.
You sketch it there.
that
solves that problem. But there's other ways to beat it. Like, you don't have to run attachments to beat Bear Island. If you're running Targ, generally, especially Burn, you generally don't care if they're going to, like, kill your guys in Dominance. Your guys have done their job when they came into play.
That's true. If you've got good character control.
Anymore.
Yeah, Greyjoy's got enough saves that, like, you can try and eat all of them, but, like, if they hit them early, or especially the repeatable ones, they should be relatively safe, too.
Yeah.
And these decks run a really, really fragile gold curve as a general rule, because House of Dreams tends to just be vulnerable to, like...
Yeah, I have found that economy disruption tends to just derail Stark more than it does most houses.
Yeah, well, and don't forget, if you're using Bear Island, you're not using neutral cards, which makes that resource base even trickier, especially with House of Dreams, because you're not able to use the streets and things that really help out on those setups.
Yeah, choke is a good answer.
Not even necessarily like choke. I was talking to Greg this week about choking. Not both hands around the neck, but just like a little pressure to the Adam's apple or something.
A little something in the throat.
Phrase.
Yeah. Shove but, half a hot dog down your mouth. Yeah.
A lot just of houses can do that well now. That like light wintry choke and just like mess with Gold Curve enough.
Yeah, and that goes back to kind of last week. I mean, a little attrition goes a long way right now with some of these top decks. I mean, Song of Ice, I Know Wilt, and Shove It, You're Wrong.
No, I wasn't going to get into that. I was just going to say that the winter agendas are a popular option right now to help combat the card advantage of the rivers. And I believe Aaron said that this particular build, the one, was definitely running the rivers and getting some of that extra card advantage, which is another thing that can be even more limited in Stark Bear Island decks because of the Stark-only restriction. So, you know, that's something that they're counting on.
So I've got a cool idea for the deck to help it. I know this isn't really the point, but I figured I'd share it for anyone who might want to run it. If you run that new Cat Stark, the one that leaves play and brings you back a dead Stark, that should, with the rivers, that should go a long way to mitigating, like, both card advantage and your resource problems.
She's so good. I mean, love the jumper one, but, oh, she's phenomenal.
Yeah, you put her back to the top of your deck, you get a Rob Stark back. You put her back, you get a Mira back. So on and so forth.
Yeah. But, yeah, I think that's really the best way to kind of counter it right now. I mean, like you said, you kind of have to play to your house's strengths. And dealing with Bear Island is just like dealing with Stark Murder in general. A good way that I do when I test decks against stuff like this is I'll do some ghost hands, and I'll just assume that I'm losing claim 3 military every turn. I just see how I can hand up to just like that barrage. And it's not going to end well if you assume you lose at every turn, like you are going to eliminate your Morph presence, but seeing how well you can come back from it, how much fight you can put up, getting hit like that every turn, it's a good way to see how your deck handles it. Bloodthirst kind of laughs at HOD Bear Island. That's another deck. I know, hey, if you want to beat this, just run Bloodthirst.
Bloodthirst, Burn, anything choky, other Stark. Stuff with attachments like Maesters.
Mm-hmm.
The old Grave way.
Winner. So just the other cliche decks that we've seen take over the regional season so far.
Well, and, right. You know, another single card. It's not an end-all, be-all answer, but I haven't seen Search and Detain played in a long time. And with House of Dreams kind of popping up again, it might be a solid option to get stuff out of the way long enough to ditch the immunities and then... You know, then you can find another way to deal with it from there, be that blanking or some good old-fashioned newly made lords or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
If you have Naval, there's always Battle for Shield, too. It's always my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
My Bear Island.
And there's thoughts to say about, I mean, with Harrenhal coming out, I think the cities are worth a look again. I think me and Will were talking about this.
Yeah, I think we were earlier.
How it's nice control that isn't a trigger. And being able to hit that location, hit an HOD, I think it's something worth looking at. Now, obviously, you're probably going to have to wait.
You're several turns in if you're doing it with cities, unless you're, accelerating as well. Yeah.
Because I hear that's a thing.
Well, you know what else you can do if you're not running the rivers? If you're not running rivers and everyone else is and you're not running one of these big card advantage things, just run Rally Cry.
Yep. Rallycry is still a fantastic card.
Yeah.
Depending on what you're doing, I had to drop it out of my Kings of Winter deck because I just never really had a good opportunity to play it. I would have either been like knocking off a street or something on the second turn, or we were turn, you know, 3-4 down the line, and suddenly I had all the cards at command.
Yeah.
If I have all the cards of command, I hit like a nothing, and I don't care. But
yeah, that's my take toward it as well. The same thing. It's just like, well, it's still, you know, I have a lot of like draw on this deck or whatever, but this card has saved my ass a few times, so still run it. And then if you have to plink off one of your chuds or some garbage location, then you got to do what you got to do. But obviously you don't want to run in a deck where time and time again you see your, you know, it hitting you every time. But I, yeah, Rally Cry is absurdly good.
I like it out of Stark a lot right now. Maybe out of Baratheon.
That's not bad.
There you go. Baratheon Noble Cause with Rally Cry.
That's how you be. Hey, man. That Stannis is real pro against that Bear Island.
Immune to locations. I like it.
He saved my ass in that exact matchup. It was I was playing like a Bera Kings of Summer against House of Dreams Stark, Bear Island, and sure enough, he won me the game. So, run dupes. Dupes are a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing wrong with some dupes. We've seen that fall out hardcore over the years.
Yeah,
but and maybe Burn with more of a reason.
Has not been popular in our area, which nah, definitely really. makes dupes look more tempting. Now everybody traveling to our regional is going to bring Burn because they hear it's not popular.
Burn's not being played a lot.
Let him bring the Burn.
I don't believe it's real good right now. By all means, let him bring it.
I mean, I think the Burn has always been a deck that's been real solid, but I don't know.
Solid, yeah.
That is a discussion for another day. But House of Dreams, Bear Island, there's a fair amount of ways to beat it. And sometimes, maybe you didn't
it's
even tune your deck for it.
Skeleton.
You just got to play around it. You just have to not splurge your hand of all your good characters and just know that, yep, we're just going to have to eat it here a little bit, you know, and try to mitigate the loss of your characters as much as possible. But I mean, it's not like it's always an auto loss. They don't always draw into their kill events. You know, they don't always have all claim two plots. So
Paper
you know,
Shield is
hope.
Also really solid. Stark
yes.
does not have a lot of influence requiring events. They're all usually character based or challenge winning based. Paper Shield
yep.
can really wreck their plans.
Yep. Paper Shield is good. Any type of challenge control, really. I mean, you're going to find the majority of that out of Martell. But the only game that matters hits a lot of Stark characters that they're going to throw in those military challenges. You know, there's options. I think that Martell probably has one of the best, like, you know, I'm going in blind. I don't know what I'm going up against. Oh, you're running House of Dreams, Baron. That's okay. I have three, he calls it, thinkings. And at least three other cards that will affect the challenge phase, you know. So, a lot more than three, but you know what I mean.
Okay.
All right. I think that touches on a lot of bases. And actually kind of points us towards the next direction here. Which I think is a little bit of a look at what we're seeing in the meta right now. One of our number hit a regional over the weekend, and two more of us hit our local end-of-league tourney. And, I don't know, Kyle, do you have the chance to check anything out this weekend?
I've done a little exploring. I'm kind of trying to gear up for Chicago next week, so I haven't done a lot of time necessarily... talking about a wide variety of decks. I've kind of honed in to what I think I'm going to play. And so...
So we'll hear more next week, basically.
Yeah. I was stay tuned. I'll follow up next week. Like, you guys can have this week, and then I'll hand off.
Well, you know, Aaron, you had the regional, so I think that's probably going to be far more exciting to people than the league stuff. So Daryl and I will follow up after that. I know you said you had some thoughts on the meta.
I have an awful lot of thoughts for the regional, but I'd like to do a full tournament report next week. I played a Bloodthirst deck that was very weird and different, and I've got all the notes and everything from match by match. But someone else, I built it with a friend, and someone else is playing it this coming weekend somewhere in the world. Lord knows where, I didn't even really ask. But somewhere in the world it's being played. And so not to be a giant dick, I figure that we can hold off a week for the tournament report, but I have a lot of notes on the meta.
Okay.
All right.
Sounds fair enough.
Rivers are absolutely everywhere. They need to go away like yesterday.
Yeah, they really are everywhere. Our league experience can back that up where, yeah, I'll just say, yes, they were everywhere. Well, maybe not at the tournament, but the league in general.
Old Way remains great, but now we've got a new contender with the House of Dreams, Made in Spain, which actually won New York. And it probably shouldn't have if people knew how to play against it yet, which was such a great call because no one does. Like, the ruling had just come out that it loses its immunity while it's a character, but regains it when it's a location. But that means that, like, it's very vulnerable to Ghastly Grey, and then it loses its immunity for the rest of the game. It's very vulnerable to Pyrophobia. And then it loses that for the rest of the game. There are answers if it's no longer protected by those immunities.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's vulnerable to discard again, and it can be burned away and discarded.
Yeah, that ruling is one that I think people really need to have heard about. So House of Dreams, the agenda, only specifies that card that you get with it gains those immunities while it's a location. If it ever ceases to be a location... At the moment, the only thing we have that does, that can be House of Dreams anyway, is Longship Maiden's Bane. So as soon as it becomes a character, those all fall off, so to speak. Once it becomes a location again, it's still physically the same card as far as the game cares, that you picked with the agenda. So it does indeed regain them all, which is kind of tricky. I can see how that's a little less than intuitive for some folks. But there's definitely ways to take advantage of that, depending on how many warships they've got and what your board's like. I could see a mid-challenge incinerate, knocking it out, and things like that as well.
Then there's two things that we're really just not seeing. Like, I even looked up the stats for one because we argued about it all last episode. Song of Ice just isn't anywhere. It wasn't in New York. Through the whole regional season, 18 have been played, which is one of the less played agendas. Only one has made the cut.
Wow.
I mean, that one won its regional, but it also won because Sandy sucks.
So that was up in Minnesota, right?
That was Minnesota.
Yeah. So I wonder if it's just because, you know, the Old Way Maiden's Bane stuff has just proven to be so strong. Everyone is, you know, opting on... for that over Song of Ice as far as Greyjoy choices go.
It didn't test well in store championships, and I think people just kind of gave up. And the other thing we're not seeing, we touched on it earlier, I don't know why, because it does great when it's played, there's not a lot of burn out there. Like, people just aren't playing a lot of burn right now, and I have no idea why. Any theories, any ideas?
I'm not sure about burn, but I do have a thought on Song of Ice that occurred to me. If rivers are everywhere, I wonder if part of it is also just kind of player mentality, right? Card advantage is everything. And if rivers are everywhere, yes, Song of Ice counters it nicely when other people are doing it, but it doesn't give you that room to enjoy them yourself that much. So maybe folks are staying away from it some so that they can use rivers themselves.
Well, Song of Ice doesn't give you card advantage. It gives you card equality.
Right.
And then your cards just have to be better.
Right. When I said that, I was meaning that people are so attached to their card advantage that they want to play the rivers, possibly, and would rather gain that card advantage from being able to use the rivers themselves more fully, rather than claim the card equality from the agenda.
It's possible.
Just a guess.
Advantage is better than equality. It's a general rule, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Tell that to white male landowners in the beginning of the U.S.
Or, you know, now in the U.S., but whatever.
Yeah. Try not to delve too much into current social issues. I'll stick to mine from 200 years ago.
Fair enough.
Oh, man.
And the last real New York note that I think is important is in Swiss, Brathian Maesters went undefeated.
Mm.
Like, And Maesters are just severely underplayed as a whole right now.
They really are.
How many chains was he running? I mean, was it Maesters in the sense that it felt very Maestery, or was it like a splash of Maesters to push some other?
No, it was an entire Maester deck with a lot of stand effects.
Were they doing the discard combo?
They were not doing the discard combo. They were occasionally discarding, but mostly against stuff like Bloodthirst. Okay. Where they were just like, all right, if you're going to try and discard everything, we're going to deck you.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Yeah, and then just some good card advantage, some good control, and a fair amount of burn.
Because
there's nothing quite like taking away everyone's strength and cheating in... now the name is escaping me. Damn it, I had it 2 seconds ago. Zero cost attachment, Baratard.
Wow,
there's a bunch of those.
Grayscale, yeah.
Grayscale, yeah. And cheating in Grayscale and the like, and then just going to town. But it's a great, great deck. I mean, Stark Winter with Mira should always beat Maesters. Like, there's no reason for Maesters to beat that combo. But if you're not expecting a lot of Stark Winter and you have to know your meta, then Maesters out of Targ, Maesters out of Bara, even Maesters out of Greyjoy or Stark, they're all very, very good options right now.
Yeah, Greyjoy's still good. Maybe one of the more finicky ones, but being able to do the Horned Dragon stuff is so strong when you get it running.
Even a light choke. Just like, toss some winter stuff in there and Miramir, and a lot of decks aren't going to be able to get off the ground up versus you at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then that gives you a reasonable excuse to play, was it In at the Cross? No, In at the Kneeling Man.
And Alanis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that starts getting beautiful, not only with built-in character abilities, but if you're kneeling them for certain chains and getting double use, there's a lot of utility there.
Yeah. And it's pretty awesome. Stark has all the kill stuff, and Stark Maesters get better with Mrs. Kyle Szczynski, which I'm sure I said wrong, but...
Kyle number two.
New York Kyle. New York Kyle. He's awesome. Don't you start. He was running it with Stark Maesters and the new cat and just using her to like make sure that he always had a Maester alive. That was working great for him. Works with Dire Wolves and such.
That's reasonable. You know, I'm kind of curious about Targ in general, because you said the stats for the season as a whole say that Targ burn is kind of on the down and out, but you said it had a strong showing in NYC. What's up with that? Do you think people were kind of trying to play the meta, or is it just you have a couple very well-known Targ affiliated players that just stick with that house?
Three people played Targ. Struhal flamed out just through lack of practice. Got Octagon now, so he'll go back to being incredible again soon. Stroms is going to play a Targ deck at every tournament for the rest of eternity, and he's going to place with a Targ deck at every tournament for the rest of eternity. He's just phenomenal with the house. He has the best understanding of it I've ever seen. And Aaron Broderick did really well with it. His was using Waifs instead of Preston, but I think Dragon Pit's a T1 deck. It's just, even with 41 players, we saw 3 Targ. I just don't know why, but people aren't really playing Targ.
People kept saying, Dragon Pit, Dragon Pit, Dragon Pit, you know, when this FAQ hit, and it just hasn't been, you know, hasn't been bringing its A-game, so to speak, like people expected.
Well, think about it like Worlds and Gen Con last year. Like, everyone was saying Targ Hollow Hill is this amazing deck. And then it was a very, very small percentage of the field. I think people might just want to beat whatever is perceived to be, like, that popular deck. And that makes no one play it, really.
I can see that. There's a lot of folks that just like to buck that trend.
The favorite deck very rarely seems to win, so.
True.
And that's my New York thoughts.
Cool.
Good thoughts.
Well, D, how'd the league tourney go for you? Any thoughts interesting things there, or the meta we saw there? Because I think the field looked very strange at that tourney.
I mean, yeah, it was pretty strange. I mean, even I brought a pretty strange deck. God. Well, so round one, I have to go against Greg, which I thought was going to happen. And Greg did what I thought he was going to do, which was early on in the week, we were talking about the decks that like the Will's run in and the decks we think are good, which Will came with King's Winter. And so Greg shows up, and Greyjoy King's Winter at that. Greg shows up with a Lannister Song of Fire deck.
Go figure.
Like I knew he was going to do.
Play the hard counter to whatever Will's playing. Just
that's
like
right. So I was also thinking about making Lannister Song of Fire, but I didn't. I opted for something. I know. I opted for something a little different. I decided I was going to run Dothraki. And I don't know why. I just thought it was going to be awesome. Just, you know, incinerate the problems when you see them. And all the plots were, would not all of them, but most of them would affect the locations. So dry season, attack from the sea were in there. I can't really remember what else was in there. That was really it as far as attack, location control. So two of them did locations, which means all of them. Anyways, and then just spit out dudes, and I was going to beat him. I really, really was, until he did something that only Greg would do. I was at 14 power. I was on my seventh plot, which I was running Betrayal at the Wall, so I had eight plots in my plot deck. And I was at 14 power. I was going to win the next challenge phase, and Greg... he made me Valor myself by playing Citadel Law.
Jesus.
So,
which is pretty amazing.
Yeah. Everyone else was amused. I was very pissed.
I can only imagine.
This is a 1 in a million shot. It's not 1 in a million, but you know what I mean? Like, that's not going to happen. And so after that, like, he just climbed back up and one, there's really nothing I could do. I mean,
Greg, you know, plus plot cycling equals broken.
Yeah. I lived through his Valor, but I could not live through my own. So, but Dothraki was a call that I made just because I knew I was going to see a lot of House of Dream. I was going to see a lot of Old Way. Obviously, Mark had been playing his Old Way for a while. I felt like I was going to see Tunnels, and I felt like Dothraki was good against Tunnels as well. And I knew I was going to see Will's deck, which was going to just eat my hand of cards. So I decided I was going to run a deck that could play dudes and put other dudes into play. And, you know, you have Meraxes, so, and you get Jogo out there and you just build up your cards as you go. And I thought it was going to work really well. The only other person I played in the tournament was like a 12-year-old who was running Old Way, which I mercilessly beat. He's a good kid, though.
I mean, didn't good he kid. Win his other two games?
Yes. I believe he did. What was his name? Trevor, was it?
It's Levi.
It's Brett. Right. Levi. So that is Wes Vaughn's youngest. Brett Vaughn's little brother. The Vaughns are a great group of guys that play with us.
Yeah. Brett won the Moon Boy.
Brett won the Moon Boy. He's the reason you guys know the Old Way rules, so you can thank him. So, really cool that the kid is playing and all that jazz. I felt like a dick, but that was the only other match I got to play because I had a bye. So, three rounds, Greg crushed my dreams, so.
Darryl, you are a dick. You don't have to feel like one.
Oh, God, I know. I don't have to be reminded, though. So, all in all, I felt good with it, but that's how the cookie crumbled. So, yeah. Citadel Law. Yeah. Go fuck yourself. And that, boys and girls, is why you put paper shields in your deck.
You're so good right now, and a reason not to.
There's no other effect that I would have cared to paper shield, really. Like, you know, I wasn't worried about, like, my guys getting killed, really. Like, I mean, like, obviously in small quantities, not all of them all at once. I wasn't really worried about that. I knew I could recover from a Valor. I just couldn't recover from my own Valor. Damn it.
Wow.
So, yeah. All right, Will, how did your league experience go?
Well, I also went 2-1, took the Greyjoy Kings winner deck, like you said. First round, amusingly enough, or terribly enough, depending on your point of view, I played Kristen, who was playing Greyjoy Black Sails. And it was just kind of a matter of a turn
so
too
awkward.
Late. Yeah. So awkward in many ways.
I would have just parlayed out of game things, out of game victories, and just taken the loss.
Yeah. Thought about it. Sure thought about it. But no, we played it out. The game was fine. But Kristen just...
Did she cry?
No. She gave me a few glares. But just all
I'm pretty sure she
like
said she hopes you die in your sleep.
Yes.
Wow. Hey, that's the best way to go. So you know, it might be a kind thought.
There's a couple ways I'd like to go. Anyways.
I'm sure you would like to go exactly like Tyrion would.
Exactly like Tyrion. That's exactly what I was thinking of.
Yep. You know, so she would, like, right after I managed to clear off her board, then she drew Claim Raising Victarion and, like, a fleet and stuff like that. It was just bad luck. So beat her, went on, and played Greg. What's that?
Taught her a lesson.
Yeah, exactly. Taught her that we probably ought to tweak that Black Sails deck. Went on to play Greg, second round, which, of course, was lovely, considering he was playing, in many ways, the hard counter to my deck. You know, oddly enough, I don't believe it was ever even made summer until the last turn of the game, though, because first turn, we each made and won an intrigue challenge against the other one, and both pulled the Raven that we were sitting on in our hand.
Awkward.
Nice.
Yeah. And then, of course, actually, I'm not even sure Greg was playing the Raven search plot, if I remember right, but I was, and of course wanted to wait until after he pulled the season trigger, and, you know, drew into two Marauders, which I guess were fine as a three-drop Vicon. They weren't the end of the world, but it just hurt me to know that I couldn't use them to their full effectiveness. So,
but I'm like, he doesn't care that it's summer. I mean, you can only just make it not summer.
Right.
Which I don't think...
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but I didn't want some stuff like, say, the Marauders being knelt every time I revealed a plot.
Yeah, there's that.
But, I mean, it was fine. I played it up to about 9 power before he turned the game around on me. So, I mean, it was not a terrible game by any means. And then last round, I'm actually having trouble remembering who I played last round. Who the heck did I play, Daryl?
You played...
Because I was right next to you, because I was on the same side as Levi.
Did you play Corey? No, you didn't play Corey.
Yes, no, I think you're right.
You did play.
Yes, I did play Corey.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Who's one of the newer guys. He's been playing Lanny Tunnels and has been having just a terrible time trying to beat the old way with his deck, playing against his buddy Mark. So last week, I'd kind of walked him through his deck and like, okay, well, this card's not very efficient. You should probably have some more of this and that and the other and whatnot. He made a bunch of changes, messaged me excitedly during the week that he finally beat Mark's old way deck, and then got here, and I just ate his hand alive. You know, he's trying to drop stuff into shadows and get his engine running and stuff, and he just couldn't leave anything in shadows because he needed to keep getting characters out on the board, and it didn't go well for him. So
why do you have to be so mean?
Yeah, finished 2-1. I kind of hoped we'd have time for another round, but it was just like half an hour till the store closed, and we technically already had an undefeated player in Greg, or only one undefeated player, I should clarify. So we called it. But it was a strange meta. It was like half the field, I think, was playing Greyjoy. I mean, it was an 11-player tournament, but
still,
maybe only four.
Hey, Will, can you do me a favor?
Yeah.
At your regional, don't tell Greg what you're going to play.
Yeah.
That's what I told him. This is why we don't tell Greg.
He's so bad at it. I know he doesn't listen to the podcast, so I can say this, but when you stay at his house the night before, he just, like, beats games out of you. He makes you play him and to see what you're running, and then the next morning he has an epiphany, and suddenly it's like the hard counter to whatever he thought was the best deck from the night before.
Yeah.
Yeah, but just, I mean, if you know he's doing that, bring other decks and be like, yeah, this is totally what I'm playing, and then walk in and be like, whoops.
I've done that before, or I'll just change it the morning of. I'm like, I'll play games with you all night because I know this isn't what I'm running tomorrow. Yeah. I don't know what I'm running, but that's the best defense against Greg, Will. Just decide the morning of.
I mean, this was just for, you know, our local thing. I purposely have not played the deck. I'm thinking I'll probably play at regionals in weeks.
Yeah. Yep.
Good call.
Yeah.
Oh, and as a side, I was running the Long Lances. If anyone was wondering how I got through all that, Neil, Long Lances, they still kick ass.
Restricted for a reason.
Yeah.
Yep.
Props and slops. How about someone that's not Aaron kick this segment off since he kicked the last two? Daryl, what you got?
All right. Props and slops. I have a pretty big prop. Robin and I bought a PS4 today.
Ooh, yeah.
She was the one who really wanted it, and I was finally like, all right, fine.
So what was calling to her about it?
I have no idea, to be honest with you. Like, there's nothing out right now that she wanted. We just got games that I thought would be cool. She just wanted a PS4. I mean, she has her PS3. Awesome. She loves it. I really don't know. But we have one now. I picked up Watch Dogs and Battlefield 4, which I may try to return Battlefield 4 because I forgot how much I don't really care for shooters anymore. So,
especially on console. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see if I can pull some strings at work. let me return that shit. I haven't gotten to play Watch Dogs yet, but PS4, really cool system, looks really nice. I've always really liked Sony. Sony PlayStation exclusive titles, so I'm pretty stoked about that. Controller is awesome. It has like a little touchpad on it and a speaker on it, and it also has like motion controls built into it that are actually pretty tight. I don't mean like tight cool. I mean like tight as in they're very responsive.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a really awesome system. So we also thought about the Xbox One, but Rob was like, I don't want to get an Xbox One. I was like, okay. So I don't know. She likes like Persona and stuff like that. So maybe if those games will come out, she wants to get it. I don't know. Or maybe she just hates Microsoft. I don't know.
Could
but
be
the PS4, get it, because I have it, and we can play games together. Oh, and I can stream on Twitch directly from it. So that's actually pretty cool. Nice. So we can have some Let's Plays with Daryl. Well, you got a prop or a slop?
Yeah, I'm going to prop the X-Men Days of Future Past, which I finally went to go see. It was pretty good. Couple inconsistencies or WTF things, like why do Kitty's phasing powers send people's minds back in time? But, you know, whatever, wave your hand, keep watching because it's cool and has Wolverine and Mystique and stuff. So, yeah. I enjoyed it. Not my very favorite superhero movie by a long stretch, but also nowhere near as bad as, say, Ghost Rider, for instance.
Mm.
I actually liked it a lot. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I mean, probably not my top 10, but probably in my top 20. I don't know. I'd have to count how many really good superhero movies there are. It may actually be in the top 10. Aaron, you got anything, bro?
Sure. I'm all proud of the meta that came down for the New York regional. Boston's rising way too fast. It's like, Tally is like, they keep Tally, finish top in Swiss, like in the closet, and then just break him out for tournaments where he kills everyone. Like, he was undefeated in Swiss, and this is the first tournament that he's been in of like eight that finished in worst in second place. And Chris Lavin, newish player, is finishing really good. He's the only people that beat Patrick. Only person that beat Patrick, and he finished 4-2 in a really strong field. Peter, it's time to start. Peter from the Canadian meta, he won 4-star championships. He was third in this one, I believe, in this regional. Second in the Montreal regional. It's time to start looking at him as one of the best players in the world, because what more does he have to do?
Win a championship.
Win a world
I'm
championship.
Told.
Yeah, if that's the only criteria, like, you know?
That's what people keep telling me.
No, I don't.
Well, stop.
Win a world championship, otherwise, you're only as good as Daryl. Because you have the same amount of championships as he does. Don't be a Daryl.
Well, Salim, from the same, we just talked a ton about his Bear Island deck, so I feel like that earns him a prop. And then DC, like, DC has the worst rep in the world. I think it's time to put that away, because, like, Seth Lowe is one of their new main guys, and he's a super nice guy. And Patrick, like Peter, is a guy who's rising really quickly into the ranks of elite players. I played him a couple times in Storage. He just doesn't make mistakes. He's phenomenal with Graja. And that's my props.
Awesome.
Nice.
Daryl, you got anything else?
Oh, I feel like I should. Let me just double check. Now, I don't have anything else.
Okay, well,
sorry. Nothing that interesting going on? Go for it.
Well, one's a prop, one's a slop. My prop is going to be to Orphan Black, which I finally started watching. I'm like four episodes in at this point. And it's pretty good. A little trippy, but as far as sci-fi series go, it's one of the better ones I've watched in quite a while. So check it out. BBC America and all that jazz. It's on Amazon Prime, instant streaming. For anyone who hasn't heard of it by now, in a nutshell, the main character is a girl named Sarah, who witnesses another girl commit suicide. Only the other girl that she's never met before in her life looks exactly like her. And then things get even weirder from there. So
it does sound weird.
Yeah. Check it out. It's been really freaking cool so far.
I'm going to throw a slop out to Sandy Barnabas.
Mm-hmm.
Because the idiot decided to do shots for plots, which, you know, we do semi-regularly in New York. But he was playing a plot cycling deck.
Oof.
So he puked everywhere in the bar.
Wow.
Like, I'm sure Brian Aurelio wants his goddamn shirt back clean. Like, you know. Damn it, Sandy.
That's our Sandy.
Oh, man. And I hear there's a good chance he may be coming to Missouri.
Oh, he's coming. He's definitely going.
Oh, wow. So we're gonna have to watch out. God. I don't know if our bar is prepared for Sandy Barnabas.
I don't know if your Daryl is prepared for Sandy Barnabas.
Oh, Jesus, man. Dude, I don't even drink that much anymore. This is gonna be bad.
You better prepare for this weekend. Or that weekend.
Oh, God. I was gonna say this weekend?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Sandy's always a blast. So, he wanted to do... He tried to have me, like, whenever we were at Worlds, and he and I were playing just like a friendly game, he wanted to try to do, like, every time you claim a power, you take a shot. Wow. I was like, what the fuck? Are you serious? So by the time one of us wins the game, we've taken 15 shots. That's ridiculous. And that's if you don't have any power stolen off your house.
Right.
Like, come on, man. The man is a machine. The man is a machine.
He's a faulty machine.
I mean, that's the only format where you can also win and lose at the same time. Like, goodness. I love that guy.
And my last slot, well, one's real quick, and then, like, one that I'm just going to slot myself. So, first, slot to that net decking grid that, like, sucks ass on CardGameDB. It's the worst fucking thread in months. Like, if they're your cards, do what you want them and fuck everyone else's opinion. Anyone who tells you otherwise, tell them shut up their ass. Unless they
just like
that
life.
Whatever, they don't like it.
Just like life. Don't judge people.
You know,
there's no reason for it. Get over it.
That's a good point. They are your cards. You can do what you want. You know what you can even do? You can tear up without his beard on air on the podcast.
That's right. That is your Cthulhu given right.
Yeah. And I'm only bringing that back up because a listener emailed us because he was catching up on back episodes and listened to that one and about had a conniption when we actually tore up a card on air. So.
And now, just to spite you, Nate French has Podrick Payne printed. Bum, bum, bum.
Totally on purpose. Still not sure that makes without his beard a thing, but...
One of these days, like, you're going to lose in, like, the top eight or something because somebody without his bearded you. And you're going to be like, damn it!
Yeah, like I lost to the winter event Stannis.
Yeah. Don't worry. Brett beat me by having Eddard Stark come into play and claim his 15th power a while ago. So that was nice.
Yeah, that sounds pretty rad.
Yeah.
And last slap to myself for letting you guys down. Hines of the other podcast was at New York, and he finished ahead of me. We had the exact same record. He finished ahead of me by 3 strength of schedule points.
Ugh. Oh, snap.
Ouch.
That's all right.
I didn't make the cut, and Hines beat me. Shame.
Welcome to my world, man. Welcome to my world.
We're going to have you flogged.
We are?
Yeah. That's the... usual punishment for not besting other podcasts.
Oh, yeah. Well, tell those guys not to come down here, otherwise I'm going to be in trouble.
Well, Gen Con, guys, Gen Con.
Yep, I'll be there.
Well, I'm all tapped out then.
Yeah, I'm drained. Well... thank you for listening to another fine episode of Two Champs and a Chump. Feel free to email us at twochampsonechump@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/twochampsonechump. Follow us on Twitter at twochampsonechump. And add us on Google+. Why not? Add us to one of your circles. Seriously, though, feel free anytime to message us. If you have any ideas, we love to hear from you. We love your ideas. If you want to tell us we suck, message us that we suck. We want that. We enjoy that.
I don't...
Yes, you do. You enjoy it, Will. And, yeah. So thank you, as always, from us to you. 1 + 1 = 2. I hope that your favorite color is blue.
Danger Zone!
Turn around, there's nothing to see here. Run away, no reason to be here. It's the ghost who never goes away.
Wow, I was really afraid Daryl was having a stroke on air.
Is it bad that when he says that, I actually hear that turnaround song start in my head?
No, that's not bad. That's fantastic, I think. Of course, it also kind of hits me, too, because I'm used to tweaking when exactly that comes in after Danger Zone, week after week after week.
Well, I love our
people. I guess I've never heard the end of the podcast. What is what happens?
There's an outro song
that talks about turning it around.
It the first words are "turn around." I think there's nothing to see here.
Yeah,
and like I've never listened past that exact line, so I don't know what the hell comes after that. But around that, I've got nothing to see here, and then I hit stop.
Yeah, so I figured that would be a good stopping point for most people with that kind of lyric. I mean, you know, probably 2/3 of our episodes have amusing Easter eggs after that, but, you know, whatever.